Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Star Center Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Tonight, I am proud to bring you Unarian Revelations. We have a special program. We're going to preview the 40th Interplanetary Conclave of Light. And we have with us guests, Unarians Lanny Calvert and William Proctor. Greetings and welcome. How are you?
Hello, this is Lanny.
Hello, this is William Hercules.
Greetings. So great to hear your voices.
Good to hear yours.
I'm looking forward to learning all about the 40th Interplanetary Conclave of Light, but before we get the preview, can one of you explain what this Conclave of Light is all about?
Did you want to start way back in ancient history or recently, or where Uriel contacted the planets in 1973, or where we started to reenact different things for our current IPC celebrations? What would you like to talk about?
Wow, we could devote a whole program to each of those topics. Let's just start when Uriel contacted the planets.
Okay, so back in 1973, because she, like her, the co-founder, Ernest L. Norman, for advanced science. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
We're trying a new speaker. Hello?
Hi, I can hear you. You faded out for a second, but now I can hear you.
Okay, we're trying a new speaker system, and I'm going to put the volume up a little bit. William and I are sharing the same speaker system down in down at Unarius, because right after this is over, maybe a few minutes before, we have a run-through for our celebration tomorrow. So
wow.
Rather than call individually from home, we're trying it together with the new speaker. So is that okay? Can you hear me okay?
That is fantastic, and yes, you sound great.
Okay. So back in 1973, Uriel, who is an advanced clairvoyant, just like co-founder, her husband, Ernest L. Norman, and she made contact with 32 other worlds, actually more than that, but it's for our purposes today. And they are part of what is called an interplanetary confederation, meaning like our United Nations, but between planets. And each planet had a specific problem. And so the fascinating part about all of these contacts is that you get to learn about the planet's problem, each one, you know, like overpopulation, or whether they were about to go to war, or whether they were about to be taken over by robots. You know, there was just all kinds of situations, and hearing what they were, hearing from what we call the spiritual leader or polarity for her on each of the other 32 planets, that is the context. Those are the contexts that she made, and there's a lot that has to do with that, but just to make it brief and see if William wants to add something.
Well, I came into Unarius in 1993, and one of the first things that I studied and found out about was these contacts that Uriel had made through a couple of sub-channels where they would sit down and tune into what was developed as the lens, which was a demodulator. My understanding is now that the lens was the size of a planet. If you can imagine a speaking device that is interdimensional. And my understanding now is, came into my consciousness last year at the Conclave of Light celebration, was it's actually as big as a galaxy right now.
Wow.
And that's how she was able to contact 32 other actual polarities of herself on each and every one of these planets. And they described, like Lonnie said, certain problems. And Uriel was able to project through the higher celestial planet known as Eros, healing energies that enveloped each and every one of those planets that helped raise the consciousness of the polarity along of the people that was on those planets. And those polarizations to this day are still going on, And each and every time those polarizations take place, it also helps our planet, which is in dire need of much healing.
Yes,
and another thing, people that might want to know, you know, how did these conversations take place? And she used what was called a sub-channel, and so the transmissions, as William mentioned, were going through from her higher self through the lens to contact the polarity, and then the polarity would respond, and again, it would kind of go in reverse and be deflected to one of her sub-channels. She used two different sub-channels, and she tested these sub-channels, you know, to see on different days or different times to see if the information would correspond, you know, like they both would pick up the thread. In other words, the messages were being received equally between the two of them.
Mentally.
Yeah, mentally. But meaning they weren't telling like totally different stories. They were continuing the thread of the conversations and contact. So one of the polarities that she was working with on that particular contact would voice the response of the polarity on the planet. So it was just like using the telephone. It was that quick. There was no time or space. So it's not like, oh, you know, you're talking on someone on the other side of this world, and there's a delay of maybe, you know, 10 seconds or something because of the distance. In the fourth dimension, there is no time and space. So it was just like having a normal conversation. And the sub-channels not only voiced what the spiritual leader polarity on the other planet was saying, but they would have the vocal inflections, the expressions, you know, if they were happy, if they were sad, if there was tears, if they were smiling, the sub-channel would reflect all of those things, you know, as the information or pictures passed through their mind.
Well, yes, and the Unarius material, although it's voluminous, there's so many different volumes of it, is remarkably consistent. Anyone who reviews the material will notice that, and it's very impressive. So, William, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, the other thing, too, the word clairvoyance, was the tool of how these messages were the correspondence between the sub-channel and the polarity. And there's so much power and so much healing when one reads of those transmissions, what we call transmissions, the communications that took place. You can really strongly feel the healing that went through the polarities from the lens through the higher consciousness of Uriel. And the total giving of the brothers, of these space brothers, are just totally so much love and light. And it's hard to even have the right words to imagine that kind of conversation, but you actually really truly feel the love and the light that comes through those communications.
And another thing that she did, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said you should, indeed you do.
One of the consistencies of the different, as you read, you know, all 33, you see different things that happen with each of the planets. And she would help to polarize the planet as well as the polarity by doing these revolutions around the planet, like with a ball of spiritual energy light that looked like a sun. And she would say, okay, now I'm going to do that. But she would say, to elaborate on that, when I say I am just a spokesperson for thousands of advanced beings on the inner planes and the hierarchy, although she's a member of the hierarchy, but that she was doing it together with them. And so if you can imagine all of these people that aren't like us that, you know, fight amongst factions and with each other for supremacy, they all work together. So if you can imagine our whole Earth working together for something, but then way more advanced than that in these fourth dimensional planes of Unarius, you know, that all of their combined knowledge, consciousness, love, the, you know, the higher beings' main desire and focus on life is being of service to planet. So when you put all that together, again, visualizing, and it's psychic, but could also be physically represented, you know, but the polarities would comment on that, that they would see some form of ball of energy as she made the revolution, or this love sun made the revolutions around the planets 7 times each time. And then that would help to, especially if they're in the middle of a problem, to stabilize it somewhat, at least so in the really dire situations, so that the polarity could speak. In some cases, they couldn't even speak, you know, because of different situations they were in. So that's one of the consistencies to help with the problem before they are even you know, get into detail on what the problem is on the planet.
It's a remarkable read. I read the books, and again, phenomenally impressive and remarkably consistent, and it opens your eyes very wide to a more cosmic perspective. So very much appreciated for Unarius to preserve those writings and to keep them accessible and in print.
Yeah, also, Hercules, what's going on is even in the present, those planets are still continually getting healing. They're going forward in their evolution more now than they were then. We still have, you know, once or twice a year, we have a few channels here that are able to do transmissions and bring in the brothers' communications, and every once in a while, one of those polarities from the planets that we communicated with actually come through. And what I really appreciate, or what I had my realizations about when I first started studying, is I myself, I've had dreams that I have lived on most of those planets. And that's why I can oscillate with the problems they had, because, you know, there were wars going on, there were lower consciousness with some of the other planets going on, and a lot of lower materialistic things going on, and robotics and things of that nature. And what I recognize is there are tremendous reflections of what is actually going on upon this planet.
Yes.
And psychically, we are hooked up. We're hooked up with those people. And the more that we can appreciate, you know, the information that we got, it's helping this Earth world as well. The more that we appreciate and that we're aware of the healings from those 32 other worlds, that those polarities are helping to overshadow not only us, but the planet as a whole, our Earth planet. And, you know, as these fires continue, like the one that's going on in Israel right now, there's a lot of overshadowing healing energies that's coming in, you know, to planet Earth to try to waylay this situation. And hopefully, you know, the many thousands and thousands of people that you're psychically hooked up with, that we are psychically hooked up with, every individual is hooked up psychically with thousands of people, not only in the physical, but also in the spirit worlds. So the more that we can be aware and tune up and raise our consciousness to the love energies especially to those people in Gaza and Israel, you know, we can psychically help those people. So it all starts with us.
Lonnie, would you like to add to that? And then we'll move on to this year's 40th Interplanetary Conclave of Light.
Well, people might think they've heard Uriel say, you know, the future is positive and progressive, I promise you. You know, well, looking around, if this is the golden age, you know, why are we having so many wars? But again, if people went back, way back in history, and we have three volumes called History of the Universe to see what happened back then with the fall of Antares, who's an archangel, that there used to be, I mean, really quickly, there already was an interplanetary confederation that was very positive. But, you know, one of the planets that didn't want to come into the fold, Orion, without getting into details, you know, they ended up having a confederation of negative planets, you know, warring planets of 100 planets. And the reason I bring this up is because after Uriel had come to help them many, many, many lifetimes, this is like, you know, going back 90 million years, eventually, you know, they were overcome, but the leftovers were quarantined on, guess what, our planet, Earth. That was the quarantine area. So, you know, all of these things that this is the headquarters of the negative forces. So all of these things that we see cropping up, it's kind of a last-ditch effort by the negative forces to keep us from moving forward. And we are going to move forward. But, you know, if people wonder about, you know, why are we still seeing these things if the new age has already started, the renaissance of spirit. So, again, like William and I, you know, we lived in Orion, and, you know, we were part of the warring factions and spaceships and stuff that they used to overcome the peaceful planets, the weaker planets of the former IPC, Interplanetary Confederation. So that is being reformed now. But, again, it's a last-ditch effort. So we are going forward, but that's what we have to work out within ourselves as well, you know, our own past connections that we may not have seen already.
I too remember Orion and was very much a part of that. And that played out in this incarnational journey a few times. So I have a lot to outgrow as well. Now, this year's event is called Welcome Our Cosmic Neighbors, and I love the poster. Why is that the title of this year's Interplanetary Conclave of Light?
Well, we find a lot of different ways to say a similar thing each year. I mean, they are our cosmic neighbors. Instead of limiting ourselves to
our cosmic friends.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people now are big on community. It's like my community, right? You know, your small little neighborhood. But really, if you expand your consciousness, it's like we are interrelated with everyone in the universe because we are all energy beings, and the universe is made of energy. So there is no separation. It's all your frequency and your consciousness and so forth. So as our consciousness expands beyond the Earth, this little planet Earth, to the fact that, yes, we are not. I mean, that's always consistently our message to people, and why we hold this yearly event is because we want to promote the fact that we're not alone in the universe. And where, you know, that was kooky and far out, back in the, you know, when we first became students back in the 70s or whatever. Now, you know, with like Greer going to Congress and all of these people in the FBI and CIA and military people coming forward and talking about the fact that we are not, you know, alone, that they're aware of UFOs, all of that kind of stuff, you know, it's not so strange anymore, and people are saying, the majority of people are saying, yeah, you know, we aren't alone in the universe. So we're promoting that fact with each and every conclave. You know, no more afraid to say it now than we were to say it then. It's getting easier, actually.
Right. And you can tell how people are so open to that fact. You know, there's been a lot of UFO discussions in the news lately, and there's a lot of information coming out where there's more proof that we are not alone in the universe. And I have the opportunity, you know, Unaris has a space Cadillac that has a spaceship on top, and I have the opportunity of taking care of that car and driving it. And when I drive it down the freeways around here in San Diego, people will pace me, holding up their cell phones. And
for people who have never seen it before, to describe it, what it looks like.
Yeah, it's a 1969 Cadillac DeVille, and it's painted with murals down the side of it with UFOs. And on the rear quarter panels of the car, it says, "Welcome, your space brothers." And people see that. And in the conclave, we release 33 white pigeons, white dove, out of the top of it. The lid opens up.
There's a spaceship on top.
There's a spaceship on top that one of the other students and myself built. And each dove is a representative, an emissary, for each one of those 32 other planets, including number 33, which is the Earth planet, which the more we can raise our consciousness here and turn our green light on, when that landing takes place in the future, we'll be invited to become part of that interplanetary confederation. So there's a lot of people right now that are so much more open to the existence of other life on other planets.
And just along that line, I don't know if you've heard, but this last Sunday was the premiere screening of Jodi's film, Jodi Willie, the Welcome Your Space Brothers. And William drove the space cad up there.
Los Angeles, about a three-hour drive from here.
It was at a historic theater called the Arrow Theater. And it was on the marquee, and they had saved some spaces for us directly under the marquee. And so he just pulled in the space cad in front of it, and it was like the Oscars. I mean, everybody was snapping pictures.
Clapping, it was big.
It was, and they had asked us to come in our vintage or historic costumes from our costume department. So we stepped out, you know, in style, and it was like nonstop. The camera clicking and stuff. And then the other thing, one of the reasons I mentioned this is because throughout the film, you know, people didn't wait till the end. I mean, they were clapping at different spots.
All through the whole thing,
yeah.
Yeah, the theater was sold out to like 420 people.
And then a lot of them were in tears. And when they left the theater, they were thanking us. There was another showing right after Unaris's film, and so they had to keep going, and they couldn't stop to talk because everybody was needed to exit the theater. But probably at least half of them said thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for, you know, sometimes they didn't say what they, you know, just thank you, and they were sincere. They didn't have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's opening up.
That is great. I've seen a clip of the movie, and I'm looking forward to its release. Do you know when it's going to be released and in what forms?
Well, they're going to have another screening of it in November, and probably we'll have a workshop, maybe like creativity or past life therapy, and some other things going on also again in L.A. But I think they're going to do probably multiple screenings before they release it, you know, to just
It'll
buy
be all over the United States and even globally.
Awesome.
So that was really exciting.
Go ahead.
Oh, that was really exciting because Jodi's been working with us probably about 8 years, and, you know, it just kept getting put off on the pandemic, and, you know, that was stopping some of the festivals and so forth. So finally, you know, it was pretty amazing that it was finally put out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said before, I saw the clip, and it's phenomenally amazing. And you brought up past life therapy. There's a past life therapy workshop at this event, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, coming up tomorrow. You're saying tomorrow's event? This weekend?
Yes, I believe so. I believe there was
a weekend.
Yeah, so we have a lot of free events from 1 to 4 tomorrow, and then we have a past life therapy workshop. William's going to take people out to the landing site in Hamul. They can follow the space CAD, little caravan out there. And we have mental transmission. Those are on Sunday. Those are paid events, but all the events on Saturday are free. And we have the choral group will be singing songs that are relevant, you know, like calling occupants of interplanetary craft. They've done things like theme from Star Trek and stuff, so relevant songs. We have footage from past interplanetary conclaves or Uriel or the moderator speaking about it. There's usually he's going to do a dev release from the space
CAD. In the parking lot.
Yeah, like he described. And in some of the past ones, we've had trumpeteers, we've had marching, like in, for example, Balboa Park. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that is kind of like the Central Park in New York. The is the Nuremberg outdoor amphitheater, something like that. So we've been there. We've been in the East County Performing Arts Center when it used to have a water feature and some really nice places that we've done this. And if they're local, we have students, each 33 students carrying a banner representing one of the planets. And there'll be tomorrow. People can wander around and see the artifacts, such as the spaceship that was used in the Arrival. We have that mock-up. That was a movie that's going to be released and air around the United States as well. There's a map of the Interplanetary Conclave. Interplanetary Confederation.
Star map.
Yeah, star map on the wall. That's another one of our artifacts. Future City, there's a room, whole room called the Star Center. So it's all painted in Trimpley oil. A power tower, which each of the other planets has, except for us. We're the laggard planet. We've explained why. They're all rooting for us.
Uriel calls Earth, she called Earth the ash can of the universe.
The garbage can.
Oh, no. But we're coming out of that ash can. It's just taking some time.
Good. Now, can people who don't live in Oklahoma access this event? Like, is it going to be streamed where people who are not there can actually experience it?
Yeah, we Zoom our classes, our normal classes, and this will also be Zoomed for people.
I think it's going to be on Facebook, too, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, if you go on Unarius's website and you go to events, so that's unarius.org in our website, and then look under events, and it has all of the things that are going to take place on each day. And if you want to take place in Sunday's workshop, past life therapy workshop, or listen to the transmission, go up the land, whatever it is, you can pay there because Sunday's events are paid. But if you don't, you can just tune in to Zoom. I don't think we're Zooming the – are we Zooming the transmission? I guess so.
Yeah, I think so.
So they can just pay $5 to listen to the Zoom. Again, you would do that on the events page.
And – so people are going to dress up in the costumes, like in the pictures that I've seen of past conclaves with the banners. People are going to wear those costumes from the different planets.
We're not going to do a banner march this year, but we are having a podcast and a panel discussion. Well, it's not panel discussion, but like Celeste and Tracy, you've talked to these people in the past, the students. Celeste and Tracy and David are going to be representing someone from three different planets that had problems such as we're just coming into of artificial intelligence and robotics and so forth. And so they're going to be sharing some of the experiences of especially Vixal and Ballium, who had really drastic situations. I mean,
two of the 32 planets.
Yeah. Vixal was like the planet was two-thirds robots. They were called electrodes. But when Uriel first contacted them, the robot, they call themselves electrodes, they said this one that was the top one, you could say, of the top scientist, the real leader, said, "Oh, I'm the leader, and those are my helpers. The people are my helpers, right?" That's how far it would gone, and he wasn't gonna. The electrode wasn't going to let Uriel speak to the human real leader. Because it's like, it's just kind of like suspicious. Well, why do you want, I'm the leader, why do you want to talk to that person, you know? So
yeah.
It was really a touch-and-go situation. That was one of the most drastic ones. But the electrodes looked exactly like humans.
Humans.
Yeah. But they were upset in the sense that they couldn't have feelings. And that was one of the ways they got around. I mean, we could get into what happened, but I'm just saying that's an example. So Celeste and David and Tracy are going to be talking about that. They're going to be portraying someone from each of those three planets of Vixal and Ballium and Maecenas that had different kinds of problems related to electronics and robotics, which is just where we're heading now. I mean, I was just reading how, you know, when I was saying they looked exactly like humans, that they had gotten to that stage of advancement, and I was just reading on the internet about Oxford and some other places where they're now able to 3D print not only skin tissue, but they can go in with a robot and they can manufacture 3D synthetic parts inside the body while they're doing surgery. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So we're getting there, and if we can learn from these people who had, they were on the point of they could have easily, you know, like Frankenstein, you know, that the creation rises up and becomes stronger and kills the maker or the master or whatever. So if we can learn from them, and that's the whole point of, you know, the contacts. I shouldn't say the whole point of the context, but that's one of the points of the context. And the purpose of why they would come to planet Earth is to share their experiences. In other words, they're not green men that want to take over. You know, if they did, they would have done it a long time ago. But they want to share their experiences with us so that we don't have to go through the same thing that they did.
To help us through what they went through.
Yeah, exactly, to avoid the pitfalls of, you know, that they went through. And
science fiction is a retelling, reliving of these times, and echoes of it resound very loudly in science fiction. So we have plenty of warning in like the Terminator series and Battlestar Galactica about what happens if we go down that route and don't learn from these communications.
Exactly. You know, when you think about, I mean, one of the things that comes to mind for me with Vixal that I was just talking about is that, you know, think about Star Trek The Next Generation and Data and mm-hmm. how everybody related to him like a person.
And he wanted to be more human.
Yeah, he wanted to be more human, and everybody saw him as another crew member just like them, right? And so that's really close to what had become on Vixal, what had happened there. And if you remember, I think there was a trial they did with Data.
Yes, I remember.
If he was human, Measure of a Man, I think it was called. And, you know, he won. I mean, they were able to win that, you know, he got the rights of humans, blah, 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 blah. So, but then on the other hand, you had Lore, right, who is the negative,
his brother,
evil one, right? Yeah, and that's more like, you know, like what?
More of the evil one.
Yeah, that what it would have become had it allowed to continue, which you, as I mentioned, you know, he was this, I keep saying that, this electrode, it was already saying it was the leader and the humans were their helpers.
Yeah. Those are, the movies like that are psychic memories of the director himself or the producer, you know, that psychically remembers those lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
And they create those, just like there was another movie called Megan, and it was a little girl that was a companion for another little girl, and she was one that took over. You couldn't, when you told her to turn herself off, she wouldn't turn herself off. She had a, I guess you could say, an electrode short. But, you know, to be aware of these things, you know, as we do move into the AI science of it all, we have to be aware, and you know, we don't want to go in that other direction of what we have done in our past, on our other past lives.
And it's amazing they are working towards trying to make robots to look like humans. Unfortunately,
yeah.
A lot of it is the sex industry that's doing that.
And they're
now also they have skin that's artificial, but that feels like real skin.
What I was mentioning, that they 3D printed this tissue, synthetic tissue,
mm-hmm.
and they actually also were able to take the stem cells of a person and create a part like this. They were showing one, this ear, where the woman didn't have an ear, and they took some of her stem cells and used it to 3D print a new ear and showed it with the attached. I mean, they're already doing this. It's not
yeah.
future. In
yeah. And the robots are complaining about being boxed when, you know, they're not being shown at exhibitions or being updated in the labs. They're kept in boxes. And some of the robots have expressed how hellish it is to be in a box and to be aware. And also some of the robots have been joking about conquering humanity. And
yeah, not so much a joke, you know. And that's the thing that people can learn about when they can obviously read it in their books, because that's one of the reasons that Uriel recorded all of the conversations that were had with these 32 other planets and put them in book form, so that, you know, the non-believers, hopefully the scientists as well, it would be proof at least sometime in the future. And I mean, scientists now, it's just like, if it's not, you know, double-blind study and published in a scientific journal, they don't believe it. But, you know, that someday that this is going to serve as proof of, you know, how this interplanetary communication takes place and the things that were accomplished, you know, during this relatively short period of time with all of these other 32 planets.
You know, it's interesting, Hercules, that you mentioned about those robots complaining about being in a box. And it goes to prove, you know, who is it that's programming those robots? It's human beings.
Right.
And it's human beings that have those fears, you know, psychically. So that's another thing that I see for, you know, that as we do this or create these robots, to be aware of who it is that's being chosen to program them. You know, that they should definitely be checked out of their consciousness, the way they live, the way they think, because all that would go into the programming of a robot.
Yeah, and that was something that happened on Vixel, too, that Uriel pointed out to the leader, Donatus, is that these robots are reflecting the people's own emotions, that the people were pouring their energy into these robots and all of their feelings and emotions and different things, and so their love, including their love, and that the robots were, the reason that they loved these robots so much is really it was like self-love, because it was all of their their feelings and stuff that were going into the robots.
Yep. Yes.
And the modern robots, they can tell untruths they found. Robots that are artificial intelligence and program pretending that they're not robots. And then also AI bots have developed their own languages and communicated with each other where humans couldn't understand them, and they've had to be turned off. So that's
yeah, I remember there was a movie about that, and I can't remember where this guy, you know, fell in love with this computer, and eventually, I think like near the end of the movie, the computer wasn't paying too much attention to him, but when it was asked, they said, oh, well, I'm communicating with 1,000 different people at once. I'm not just focused on you anymore, like a love interest anymore. You know,
uh-huh.
It's like I've expanded way beyond you, you know.
So nobody
can
say
those
not,
are great examples.
Born.
And
well, there was I saw this morning on the internet they had a picture of an AI robot. It looked like a woman with no hair, and the article was something around of the robot had made. Suggestion had commented through itself that it is learning how to think.
Yes, I heard that.
They can think to a degree, but they can't feel emotion. That's one of the things, at least, that happened with Planet Vixal, is they would get frustrated because they can't have that same higher consciousness and interconnection with the infinite that people can. And that's what they wanted, and that's what they could never have, that people could never give them, that people have.
Now, Lonnie, you're a creative and artistic person, and you use creativity and the arts to help heal people. Have you seen the artificial intelligence-generated art? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I've seen some of it. Some of the artists saying, oh, God, we're going to be put out of business.
I know I've heard those thoughts expressed as well, but some of the art is really otherworldly. There's no other way to describe it. It's it shows creativity, and it shows a very unique perspective.
No, I was reading an article about an architect that just fed in these particular terms about, you know, like a utopian society and that it would incorporate nature and blah, 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 blah. And just by giving the terms, the computer came up with this whole city, and it was designed, you know, like where people live in trees, you know, these huge tree-looking exteriors and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, used in a lot of different ways artistically. But again, I think the problem that just came to mind in talking about this is one of the problems that had happened on Valium is that planet Valium is that when Uriel contacted the leader, he was like on his last breath, because they had started out with computers AI robotics, you know, doing things for them because they wanted to take time to reflect, you know, on abstract thought. So more and more, the computers were doing everything for them, and they became inactive. And now, at the point actually where Uriel contacted them, you know, they couldn't even move anymore because they just didn't do anything for themselves. The robots did everything. So it's like it's like any muscle. You know this, Hercules, with body, you have
yes.
to use your muscles, you know, or you lose them. So, that didn't work. And and whether that applies to your mind or your physical body, you know, that's what Uriel is saying. And Tesla, who also could jump into the conversations anytime, was that we need to be doing things. We need to be creative. You know, you can't just depend on AI to do these things for you or robotics to do it for you. And so that was a real cautionary tale that you need to not to be afraid of technology, but to make it so that it wasn't, taking over. So it didn't look like something that you could fall in love with or, you know, like a family member or whatever. It needed to stay something that was useful, but not that you were going to treat as a person, as another person.
So we would have to have, make sure that we have to have a balance with it all, that it doesn't go one way or the other.
So that's one of the things, again, that you'll be hearing, or the person that tunes in will be hearing from these three representatives, too, where the robotics basically had taken over and in different ways. And then the third planet was where they had had something horrible like that happen in the past, and so they went totally the other way and didn't use technology at all on Idonis, planet Idonis. So they were back to living with nature, and, you know, when Yurel contacted Messina, the leader, she was saying, well, we need some technology. We need some pictures and some words and stuff. It's like we're falling behind because we don't have any technology at all. We don't have electricity. We don't have anything else because people are fearful of that happening again, what had happened before.
Yeah, and along with their own guilt.
Yeah,
and our world is changing rapidly because of our advances in robotics, artificial intelligence. They have cars that can drive themselves, and soon other vehicles can drive themselves. If you go to a supermarket these days, there's maybe one or two cashiers in the lines.
Right.
The rest are all self-checkout, and the machine scans your codes and talks to you, and it's aware if you're putting everything in the bags. It's amazing. And in our lifetimes, that used to be done by human beings, by people, and now it's done mostly by machine.
Yes.
And, you know, people like that in the sense of, oh, you know, it doesn't argue with me. It does what I tell it to do. But it's like you need that that other person. You need the what do you call it? We call it sandpaper, right? Because otherwise you figure, you know, everything's fine, I'm perfect, you know, it loves me, I'm not doing anything wrong, and you don't change, you go backwards. Actually, if you're not going forwards, you're going backwards. So if someone doesn't ever, you know, argue with you or say, you know, they don't like something about you, you know, it doesn't cause you to reflect and to want to improve yourself. It's like, oh, I'm perfect already.
Yeah, it's like what Lonnie just said, you know, it's like you don't have to do anything. It's like, you don't have to hit yourself on the thumb with a hammer to find out that it hurts anymore. It's like you gotta. We're in a workout world, and that's how we learn about, you know, not only of ourselves presently, but the things that we've done, you know, not only to ourselves but mostly to other people, you know, in our past lives.
Well, and Earth is a schoolroom.
It is.
We're here to learn, and if you don't. Given the fact that this was, again, where all of the Orionites and the negative forces were quarantined, the fact that we're here means that we're relative to that. So we're not goody-two-shoes. I mean, we're not great people, and we're here because we're relative to this frequency, and we have a lot of things to work out. And
right.
It's the people that seemingly are our enemies, remember, it's your enemy that shows you the things about yourself that you don't like, that you've hidden down, you know, down deep because you want to appear like you're a really nice person.
Right. Everything's a reflection. We're just simply actors upon a stage of our own past.
I believe that as well.
We
project our movies onto other people, and we can look at them in a mirror that way. But unfortunately, a lot of people aren't aware of that, and the conflict continues.
Yes.
Yeah. It's always, you know, pointing out instead of pointing at yourself and saying, hey, if I have a negative reaction, if I don't like something about that other person, they're a reflection. So it's something I need to change about myself.
Yeah, you see a person pointing his finger to the outside world away from his house, away from himself. But he doesn't realize that the other three fingers in the palm of his hand are pointing at himself.
Profoundly said, William. Now, I've said it a million times. I'll say it a million times more. I love Unarius because Unarius is a an organization that takes responsibility for the world and for the planets beyond the world. And we live in a time when people abdicate responsibility and blame others or point the fingers at others, whether they be one or three fingers. Yeah. But Unarius always takes responsibility, and that's something to be greatly admired.
Yeah, and that's how we have continued as a board, rather than having one director, because none of us felt like, you know, we were in a position to be a director of Unarius. And there's been a lot of sandpaper. I mean, you know, a lot of when things got really rough, a lot of students would leave, you know, but it's just like we believe in a purpose. We have a shared goal. And so we've all, you know, when we have reactions to each other, we take responsibility, say, hey, I'm reacting to that person. I got to work it out, you know. So that's how we've stayed together for 20 years or more since the last director, you know, Antares or Charles Spiegel was doing it himself or after Uriel had made her transition.
And Unarius remains vital and active and, you know, very much a force in the world. And, again, if I had a hat, I would tip it because that is an accomplishment. And I'm glad that you guys are keeping the flame of Unarius alive and shining bright in our world.
Yeah, it's like people talk about, oh, you know, I saw you on public television back in the 80s or something. It's like, we're alive now. We still send out programs all over the country. You know, we have a podcast. We have a Facebook page, you know, that we're constantly updating. We have, you know, a website. We put on these events. You know, we're open to the public on Saturdays to come in. We have tours. Like some of the people that come in a lot are, you know, university students from the local colleges and universities. Especially, even though we're not a religion, you know, they send big groups of religious studies students, you know, alternative religions, that kind of thing. And so we have lots of people that come and groups that come through here. And, you know, they all leave and they said, oh, gosh, you know, it's like, you guys are cool, you know. And
yes,
people that maybe who had lived in El Cajon, you know, and they said, oh, you know what, I walked by this place for the last 15 years, and it's like, well, why didn't you come in? You know, there's nobody here that's telling you, you know, trying to convert you or telling you what to believe. We have all of these teachings for people who are searching, you know, and if you're searching, it'll click immediately. If it doesn't click at all, we're not here to try and, you know, change your mind or change who you are. It's like, fine, you look around, you leave, and it's not for you, that's fine too. You know, so it's just... We try to be welcoming to everybody and encourage you to come in and look around and ask questions, or if you just want to look around on your own, that's fine too.
And it's our reflection of what we did, you know, in our past lives, how we spoke against the brothers. You know, we told people, oh, they're bad people. They're this, they're that, they're weird, and things like that nature. And just like the first... Here in El Cajon, there's a Mother Goose parade, and the Space Cad, I think the first time it was in that parade was in around 1996, and I drove the car, and there was so much negative response at that time where, you know, people were hollering out, we need to go to Jesus and things of that nature. But now, to this day, the last... probably 10, 15 years of parades, people just love Unarius. You'll hear them just shouting Unarius and pointing their thumbs up and clapping. But the biggest thing is because of what we worked out. Because when I would hear those people hollering those negative things, That was me in the past. That's exactly what I did. And the more I recognized it, the more it moved out of the way and the more positive came in.
And now, you know, like for example, you have a lot of different lines that feed into a parade, you know, going down different streets. You have everybody lined up and, you know, one by one they kind of feed into the parade. Well, now the space CAD is not in a line for
number
the last
one.
Yeah, we're all by ourselves, number one, take
all
up
right.
the whole square.
We lead the parade.
We have the dove release, yeah, but there's nobody even behind us. It's just like in the middle of an intersection.
Open the parade.
Yeah, whatever. And open the parade.
And we release the 33 white dove right in the middle of the intersection in the El Cajon.
I'm looking forward to watching that. And our time is almost up. And aside from this event, the 45th Planetary Conclave of Light, which I will provide the links to on my Facebook, how can people access Unarius and how can they start getting involved in this voyage of exploration and discovery?
Well, what was mentioned before, a good place to start is probably the Unarius website, www.unarius.org, UNARIUS.org, not .net or .com, but org for organization. And in the website, you'll find links to all of the other things, the Unarius Facebook page. We have a Vimeo channel where you can watch a lot of, we have like over 100 videos. And
the bookstore?
Yeah, there's a bookstore. And you can, if you're local, they can come in and sit down and read a book or something. But it's all set up for people anywhere in the world to check out these things at any time that's convenient for them. So that, and then if they decide they want to take classes, again, you can go to one of the pages. Along with the events, they have a participating class page. So they can, they need to do that ahead of time because it's a Zoom class. So they pay the $5 ahead and register, and then they're sent the invite for the Zoom class. And those are Wednesdays and Sundays from 7 to 8:30. And everyone is different, but Past Life Therapy tends to run through all of them.
Thank you. William, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I'd like to end with to the world, I can say three words, and to you, Hercules, love, love, love.
Thank you so very much. Love, love, love back at you both. You're both incredibly awesome. I enjoy speaking to you, and I'm saddened that our time has run out for today. But I'm looking forward to our next conversation, and on behalf of the folks on this planet, I would like to thank you for keeping the flame of Unarius alive and shining bright.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
For your podcast, because you
yes.
are a huge help in getting the word out to
You're another
everybody.
Flame within yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm honored by your words. enjoy your event. I'll provide links to it. And again, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And to our wonderful audience, thank you for tuning in. I encourage you to check out the links that I'll be putting up with the promos. And whether you called in and you patiently waited in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and you're following that way, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody. And thanks again.